no, 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 oh, oh, oh. Baby girl, what's your name? Let me talk to you. Let me buy you a drink. And then I'm T-Pain.
Welcome back. You know that's T-Pain. Buy you a drink. T-Pain was born this day in 1985. I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back here to the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you and money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or SteinerShow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. So we have been talking a lot, obviously, and the nation is talking a lot about the decision made by the Supreme Court to say that same-sex marriage is legal across the nation. It was a fight going on for years. There's been the fight around gay rights. We're right around the anniversary of Stonewall, 46th anniversary of the Stonewall riots. For those who don't know what that is, though many of you do, it was a riot that took place in New York City, in the Village, when it was a gay bar, a lot of trans people in that bar as well. It was one of the few bars where people could actually dance and be together without police harassment, because in those days that bar was actually run by the mafia, so it was kept quiet in a place. But a confrontation took place, and people don't realize that we look at that as a bunch of white guys who wanted to see each other in a bar, but actually it was built around two women. Two trans women, Marsha Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, who led that fight for their rights and continue to lead that fight for their rights after the Stonewall Rebellion. But that is seen in many ways as the birth of the gay and lesbian rights movement in America, at least the modern movement in America. And we've seen that culmination today. We said earlier today this is also the anniversary of a 1986 decision by the Supreme Court that saying that same-sex consensual sex could be banned by states. So that happened in 1986, and we're looking at this decision today. And then many other issues have come up around that decision. Some people you've seen have on Facebook, there's been this gigantic discussion about whether or not this is a white movement. It has nothing to do with people of color in this country. And that gay and trans people and lesbian people are usurping the black movement. Is that part of what we're looking at? And what does it mean to have pride in politics beyond marriage equality in this country, and more? So we're going to kind of wrestle with that with our guests here. We have Monica Stevens-Yorkman in studio, community activist from Baltimore, Sisters of the T, and part of the Baltimore Trans Alliance. Monica, good to have you in studio.
Good morning.
Sonia's with us, has not been here for a bit. Great to see her again in Baltimore in the studio. Singer, songwriter, visual artist, and part of the band Disappear Fear, her band. Sonia, good to have you here.
Thank you. Good morning.
Kalima Young is with us, director of the Baltimore Art Plus Project, project of the Office of Community Engagement at the Maryland Institute of the College of Art. Always good to have you, Kalima.
Thanks, Mark.
And I did find out that this morning when I looked at my contact show list, it was June 8th, 1993, when you first came on the show.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And Michael Franklin is with us, who is program coordinator of Star Trek Adolescent Health Program at the University of Maryland, Baltimore, and co-chair of GLSEN Baltimore, the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network. Michael, good to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can email us at talk@steinershow.org, tweet me at Mark Steiner, log on to our Facebook pages, but do call if you can with your wide range of thinking here, 410-319-8888, and tweet us at Mark Steiner, write to us at talk@steinershow.org. So what did this decision mean? What was your reaction to this decision when it was first handed down? Let me begin with you, Kalima.
Oh, my decision was the decision. I thought, yay, gay. You know, that was initially the first thought, you know, yay, gay. It was really, it's definitely a landmark after the state-by-state-by-state battles that have been going on for years. Definitely a landmark since they first brought it up as an issue in the 1970s related to making it easier for people who are partnered together to live together and be recognized in the 1980s when people started pushing towards having their families recognized around HIV/AIDS and things of that nature. So it felt very much like a huge landmark moment of yay, gay, and purple, and rainbows, and things of that nature. But of course, as always, I'm like, yay, gay, with a whole lot of intersectional analysis and things that we need to continue doing post appreciating marriage and marriage equality.
So I'm going to get to that intersectional knowledge that we have to deal with, and we'll do that in a second. Michael?
yeah, so I think hearing the decision, I was pretty excited. As someone that was previously engaged and looking forward to marriage at some point in my life, it did seem like a really important moment that sort of legitimized just like public intimacy and just the acceptance of intimacy of like same gender loving people. But in that same moment, you know, I'm seeing my Facebook light up in rainbow colors and it's really awesome and really fantastic and loving. I keep having this thought and worry, like, I hope people know that we're not done yet and we are so far from done. And there are so many people that have not been heard in this fight and have so much, you know, whose lives are at stake every single day. And so super excited, but also just really like, cautious, I think, in making sure and hoping that the movement would continue to move forward, serving all of us, not just some of us.
Sonia?
Yes, of course, huge wonder, wonderful amazement, overwhelm, cry. So long we've been working for this to happen and to sit in the elation of it for it is great. But the real thing, too, is that for those of us who are gay, we've been gay for a while, and I've been married since 2008. So it's more almost a movement, I think, or a recognition for the rest, for everybody else. I mean, like, most of my gay friends are like, well, it's not really going to change this for me, but it's going to change it for the young Michaels out there, the young Kalimas, the young Sonias, the young Monicas who will grow up hopefully in a world that they don't have to be shamed by who they love. So I think it's more like, you know, like in playing it forward, that's a freaking amazing thing. So it's great. It's a good beginning.
Monica.
For me, it exposed a rift that's existed for a long time, and it kind of brightened the light on it. Because I exist in a culture that tells me I can get married now, but I still won't be hired. So I don't know how I'll pay for the marriage license. So if I want the house with the picket fence, it'll probably have to be an abandoned one because I won't be able to buy one. You know, and I'm not saying that I'm saying that to expose reality. And the reality is transgender women of color, especially in this town, struggle day by day just to make ends meet. And so this law says you can get married, but you just won't be able to afford what comes along with marriage. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a pyrrhic victory in a way. So there is a lot that still needs to be done. We're still being killed at a rate that's alarming. And then on the other hand, there's still a lot of work around the relationship itself, around the people who may want to marry us and just the dynamic of that relationship. So, you know, it's wonderful that it exists. It's wonderful that there's something out there that says that it can happen. But the inside of that, there's still so much work that needs to be done. So I'm hoping that it'll help us start some new conversations and to have some new narratives inside of that conversation.
So let me ask one question, then I'll open the phones here and then really dive into all the stuff we want to talk about today, all the things you've just raised and some of the emails have just come in. Jackie just wrote an interesting email that I'll read to launch some other discussions here as well. But when the argument takes place that this bill, I mean, this decision by the Supreme Court and the battles around the states, the United States, state-by-state battles at Maryland and other places, that it was essentially a middle-class battle and essentially a white battle. What's our response to that? Because that's part of a discussion that I've seen a lot on Facebook and on this program in episodes past, because we've been covering gay, lesbian, trans rights in this program since this program began. So, I mean, what do we think about that? Anybody can just leap in. Please do.
You can start with, like, Caitlyn Jenner. Yeah, I mean, Jenner, you know, I know a lot of people that say, wow, she looks good. She looks great. Well, you know, when you have that much money and you have that much support, it's easy to go from a caterpillar to a butterfly in one step. You know, it really, really is. Where, you know, so, I mean, You know, so there are a lot of guys who a minute ago was saying, well, you know what, I'm not going to, like, even mess with, like, some Olympian guy who, and it's like, oh, well, maybe, you know. So, you know, some people's reality isn't my reality, you know. And so in my reality, it's a lot more of a day-to-day struggle. So when you look at a bill like that, it doesn't, like, encompass the day-to-day struggle of everyone. And so a lot of people have had advantages for a long time. And those advantages in this country have been with white America for a long time. I don't like the word privilege. I don't, because privilege, when I grew up, was something that you earned. And I don't like to think that white America earned what they have, because it doesn't look that way to me. There've been, a lot of people have been born with advantages. And so I would look at white America, and I would say it's the advantage class. And so there are a lot of advantages there to being white America. And so one of those advantages is a lot of people can take advantage of the marriage law that was just, you know, passed down by the Supreme Court immediately. So they don't have to do a whole lot of work to step right into the role, whereas I would, and a lot of people I know would.
Unless you're in the 14 former Confederate states. In the West.
Exactly. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, right.
Michael? Yeah, you know, I totally agree with Monica. I think, you know, but also don't want to just, sort of the conversation sort of invisibilizes people of color that have been involved in the marriage movement, and so just wanted to make sure that we're holding up and acknowledging that there are people of color that have actively been working to this fight. Mm-hmm. But in that same breath, like, if you look at, like, Maslow's hierarchy of needs in some ways, right? I mean, marriage is a pretty upper echelon need when you still are dealing with homelessness, you're still dealing with lack of employment, you're still dealing with family, folks in your family kicking you out, you're still dealing with HIV, you're still dealing with all of these really crucial base level conversations. And so it's up to us as an LGBT movement to really say, we put all this effort into this thing that really was for all of us, but, you know, a lot of people will say it was for gay men, it was for white folks, it was for middle class folks. And so how do we make sure to expand that conversation and push all of that effort into stuff that's more baseline and affecting some of our more marginalized populations? Right. That's sort of going to be the test from this point forward.
But I think also, I agree with both Monica and Michael. I agree with both of those assessments. There have been a lot of black people and people of color who have been involved in the marriage movement and in the activism around that movement. And it's about, for many people, it's not just about this sanctity of marriage. It's about the fact that it's a civil right that everyone should have. Not even if it's not going to directly impact your life, it is still a civil right that is being denied to people. So to that extent, I see the marriage equality movement is a movement around making sure that everyone had access to a civil right in some way, shape, or form. How that actually expresses itself materially and what advantages you can receive from that, that's a totally different animal. And that's based off of those base needs that you're talking about. How marriage works actually for people of color, how marriage works for trans folks, how marriage works. And that those benefits, the natural 15,000 benefits that they tote as, like, yeah, you're going to get this from getting married, that is a very problematized set of benefits that aren't necessarily going to benefit those people who are coming from marginalized communities without resources.
I think, too, I think that's a very good point. And it's true. I mean, if you're starving and you've got other issues that have to be addressed first, clearly those things have to be addressed. But I think it's an empowerment thing. I think it's like, and that's really the way to look at it. It's to sort of, like, grab a hold of your own bootstraps and go, okay, what can I do now? And I'm not, it gives you something to live into. And I think that's what this does, too. And it's, as far as, like, the advantage thing, or which the, and the other thing would be, like, the entitlement thing. I think, you know, it's, I think we have to look at our own racism, each of us, and move to, you know, what we feel in our hearts and move forward like that. I mean, I think we all, you know, we have to sort of, like, let go of some of our old things that separated us and be willing to embrace everything. I play, just for one thing, is I play pride festivals all around the world, Tel Aviv, played Mardi Gras in Sydney and in Europe, all over the place. And but I've never and I've been working, you know, with that. I have I've had transgender, I've had lesbian, gay, people of color, Hispanic people in my band, Disappear Fear, over the years. But I've never been invited to play Black Pride here in Baltimore. You know, and I would love to. I have people, a person of color in my band right now. It's only the trio. But, you know, it's like, I would love to do that, you know. So I'm here.
Mark, one more point before you go.
I had a lot of calls. I want to get some calls, but go ahead.
Okay.
And I'll go to Kalina then.
Okay, because we talk a lot about addressing the institutional racism, but not about addressing the institutional sexism. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things is we talk about all the advantages of marriage. So would two sex workers be allowed to get married and then take advantage of the financial benefits of sex work and maybe putting like sex work in a realm where it could be financially beneficial for both of them?
You have to legalize sex work first.
Yes.
Right.
I mean,
you know. That would be that.
Yes.
Yeah. You'd have to assume because those estate laws that people could take advantage of. Oh, do you actually have an estate? No, not so much. So what do you do with that?
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people. Let me get to these phones. We have a very impatient callers. We have down to one caller, but hold on, John. We're coming to you at 410-319-8888 and join him. But let's go to John, and then I'll read Jackie's piece and Lorraine's email that came in at 410-319-8888. John, you're on the air. Hi, John, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, how are you guys doing?
Very well, welcome.
Okay, thank you. First of all, I want to say I love this huge, and I really do enjoy it. But my thing is, I'm actually a little troubled at how much attention that decision is getting right now, especially with everything else that's going on in the country. I actually was listening to your show about 45 minutes ago, and you guys are touching on a lot of issues, especially issues plaguing Baltimore, and I'm sure it's plaguing a lot of other cities in this country. And I don't see a lot of people up in arms about getting those issues taken care of. And it seems like everyone is more into making sure gay marriage is implemented rather than having jobs in our cities and in our communities. And I'm just wondering, why is it that gay marriage is such an important issue at this point, especially when we have such poverty in our country, in our cities, and in our communities? As one of your guests just said, that we can have gay marriage, but transgender women or men, they still having trouble finding jobs, but you can get married, but how can you afford the marriage? You see, so I'm wondering why gay marriage is such a big issue as opposed to jobs and education in our country, but I'm just wondering if you guys can touch on that.
So this is what I was getting to earlier in the program when I said people have, you know, they're saying that gay marriage is an issue that should not be at the forefront of things at this moment. But that hides a lot of other issues as well, and there's issues that have to do with your right to be with the person you love if they're sick and dying in the hospital, right for you to inherit property, because people own homes. Half people in the city own homes. People who are gay and lesbian, black, white, Latino, whoever you are, if they own a home together, you can't leave that home to your loved one because you're not legally married. I mean, those are not small issues. The right to be in love or not be in love and take the full step, if you want to take that step, to marriage. So, well, how do you answer John's question, Kalima?
Marriage is a huge issue that needs to be unpacked. And it's not just gay marriage. The institution of marriage itself, what it means, how it's privileged in society, how we see relationships with one another, what actual benefits people receive from marriage. That is a large conversation about the foundational way that we structure family here, family, and these ideas of how we structure relationships. So marriage should be a big deal. The conversation around it, what the advantages are, what the disadvantages are, how we've shaped entire ways of how we're supposed to exist in the world around this notion of marriage. You cannot take it just as a matter of course. It has to be a big deal, and it has to be something that is continually questioned because of what it actually means for society, how it structures society, who's being advantaged by it, who's being disadvantaged by it, who's being invisibilized by it. What it means for an actual social justice movement to have it as a part of their platform. So, and the fact that there are people who are impacted by those other issues that the callers raised who are gay and trans and people of color who are invested in having this conversation too.
So I'm going to email here from Jackie and get your thoughts on this. Jackie writes in, while marriage equality isn't the ultimate issue that speaks for every LGBT folk, it's an important advancement that has benefits for those who are most marginalized economic and racial oppression. For example, access to family shelters for same-sex homeless couples, access to federally subsidized housing, family medical leave, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, that's good.
So
that's important.
No, yeah, my wife and I, we got married because once gay marriage law passed in Maryland, the state said we're going to get rid of domestic partnership benefits. Well, who was on my benefits? My wife. So we had to get married in order to make sure that we're both still covered by health insurance. Like, think about those things before you dismiss the conversation of why people are getting married.
Yeah, I had a partner for a little bit who was unemployed and needed access to health insurance. When we were pulling on to my health insurance, we weren't married. We couldn't get married. And so that was a thing that was really it created a big issue for us and for him. And so this was also something that, you know, marriage is a big deal because of things like that.
So, I mean, there's a couple of issues I want to raise. Let me do one via this email by Lorraine. Lorraine writes in, dear Steiner Show folks, please stop saying gay, lesbian, trans rights. Mark, don't forget the B. When you say gay and trans or lesbian, gay and trans, you're erasing half of those who identify as LGB who are B, bisexuals. Bisexual is real and not confused. Bisexuals come in many varieties, including fluid, pan, etc. Sylvia Rivera was bi. This is the woman who we talked about earlier, who is the Puerto Rican woman who was in the middle of the beginning of the Stonewall
Rebellion.
Through
the first bottle.
Right, through the first bottle. Sylvia Rivera was bi, as well as trans. The mother of Pride in New York City was a bi woman named Brenda Howard, who helped organize the first Pride of celebration after Stonewall. Bisexuals suffered disproportionately more than lesbians and gays, less only to trans people, RE poverty, addiction, suicide risk, sexual violence, etc. Being bi is a perfectly ordinary, sane, and healthy. Remember us. Certainly wasn't trying to leave you all out, but I think that part of what this raises, though, as well, is that what the power of both the gay movement, gay and lesbian movement in America has created, the marriage equality movement, the movements from, and I'm saying below because of the nature of our society, the movements for gay, lesbian, bi, trans women, men and women of color in this country, mm-hmm. are pushing the envelope of what sexuality means,
yes.
of pushing the envelope of what we accept as acceptable in our world and lives. I had people push back at me in this program not long ago, earlier in the year, saying that this didn't exist until the Europeans brought it. Well, then I've just finished reading a long, long piece about the various sexualities that existed on the African continent before Europeans ever saw the place and beyond. So, I mean, it's a complex question. But I think that this is pushing an envelope. That's why you're seeing such heavy pushback in the 14 former Confederate and Confederate-influenced states of America to not accept this decision. Because this decision is beyond itself, in my book. It's beyond just about marriage. It's opening a floodgate of debate around issues that I think you all care about beyond the marriage issue.
I think it's pushing the envelope about who controls the conversation. Mm-hmm. Because who controls the conversation controls people.
Yes.
And so for a long time, the people who control the conversation control religion and religiosity and people's behavior and the idea of where you spend eternity and ultimate questions. And so when you control those things, you control people's minds. And so it also linked into economies and political power. So it controlled a lot. And so who controls these questions controls a lot. And so it's really a bigger question.
Huge.
Yeah. I think the conversation is really just pushing us to think, like you said, outside of like sort of this binary, outside of this like, you know, up, down, here, there sort of conversation, and really thinking about how we all exist in many different forms and all the time. Like, fluidity is something that does exist. And so talking about fluidity of gender, talking about fluidity of sexuality, talking about acknowledging that now that we have marriage equality, are we going to start shaming LGBT folks that don't want to get married? You know, and so just making sure that we're always having that conversation, that dialogue about how to make sure that we're all there. And the work is not going to be done unless it's really truly intersectional and really including all of us.
Yeah, if we open like the aperture a little bit, like we're the 20th country to to acknowledge gay marriage, and which is now just marriage. And I think it's good to like get out a little bit to when I say open the aperture, like move a little bit further away, see Baltimore as part of Maryland, as part of USA, as part of, you know, the whole earth. Like the president, last prime minister of New Zealand is transgender, and I think there are other places in the world where it's not like this thing. So we need to, you know, kind of, I think in some ways we think we're the edge in America, and I think we think we're like the only ones, but there's so much more. Mm-hmm. We can get so much further, you know, if we can just sort of let go of some of the old fears and embrace the love.
Yeah, I think that these conversations are extremely important because it brings into the light how we create ideas of citizenship and nation, and how homosexuality sort of feeds into this, what Jasbir Puwar talks about, this idea of homo nationalism, that homosexuality and sexual rights in these conversations are raised up as the barometer of what it means to have progress, and how we need to complicate that particular narrative about who is progressive and who isn't, and what cities are progressive and what states and what particular religions are progressive versus these people are barbaric and they are pre-modern. So having an entire conversation around sexuality, even if we're just going through this avenue of gay marriage, really helps us understand or start talking about what are we holding up as notions of progress? What are we holding up as a notion of like a citizen, a proper citizen, and who is still being excluded from proper citizenship in this country?
So I mean, because I think that we'll come back from this break. I mean, let's kind of wrestle with what happened at Obama's press conference. And that is not being talked about in kind of really ways in depth. We should talk a bit about that. And the attitude, I think, of a, I don't know if it's a majority or a plurality or whatever that is for real. I have to look at some studies. But of Americans who consider themselves straight heterosexual Americans to have issues around gay, lesbian, trans, bi people as being the other and weird, and also the violence that takes place against folks mm-hmm. in these communities, especially in communities of color, mm-hmm. people who come from communities of color, I should say. So we're going to wrestle with that when we come back from this break and get your calls at 410-319-8888. I know you have thoughts and ideas. We want to hear them. Whether you agree with what's happening on this panel or not, join us at 410-319-8888. We're going to break with the Piano Concerto in G Major by Francesco Antonio Rossetti, who died on this day in 1792. Enjoy. We'll be right back. That's Phyllis Hyman. You know how to love me. Phyllis Hyman passed away on this day in 1995, committed suicide on this day in 1995. We lost one of the great creative spirits in our land, so we remember Phyllis Hyman on this day. We are here with Michael Franklin, Kalima Young, Sonia, and Monica Stevens-Yorkman as we wrestle with this issue of what all this means. And I want to get to the phone here and all the issue I just said, but you said something during break, Kalima. You mind just want to, and this will actually be a topic, I think, for a much longer, deeper discussion that we can have on this program, which I think we should have, just about what this whole question of sexuality means that you raised. Do you want to do that now, or would you rather not do that now?
I'm trying to remember which part.
Think about that for a minute, because I mean, I think okay. One of the things I did say, and then you all can jump at me across the mic here in phone land at 410-319-8888, as I said, we live in a world that comes out of the Jewish, Christian, Islamic traditions, the Abrahamic traditions, which in many ways have been really repressive when it comes to human sexuality, some people would argue. Mm-hmm. And that's the traditions that we, most of us, come out of in this world. And so, you know, when we think about why people are so angry and the violence happens against gay people, lesbian people, but especially trans people and bi people in this country, but especially trans people in this country, it has to do because people, I think, in general, have been inundated with this idea of what's wrong and are freaked out by the notion of a trans person, right. freaked out by the notion of two men kissing or two women making love unless a man wants to watch it and gets turned on. You know what I'm saying? That's the way we think.
Mm-hmm.
So we are in that place that creates this kind of violence. Well, I don't want to rent this house to you. Do we want them in our? Do I want to rent this apartment to them? You know, all that,
mm-hmm.
and how people are treated once they're arrested. So what are your thoughts on that? I'll take it away from you, Kalima, give you a chance to think about it. I didn't mean to do that to you. I'm sorry, babe.
That's okay.
So what do we think? Big sigh of silence here. What did I just do?
I was back on the birds and the bees, LB, thing that you said.
Yeah, but. I still, that whole conversation, heterosexuality would not exist without them having created the concept of homosexuality. If we even think about that from a medical term, we realize that all of these constructs have been created. We've created a binary where folks are unable or must navigate or see their way of existing in the world as the normal. We create the abnormal so that other folk can reify what they consider themselves as the normal, which is this straight, cis way of existing in the world without the acknowledgement of the fact that folks have existed in many different ways and have had sexuality in many different ways and have created their families in many different ways that aren't necessarily the norm. And I feel like those traditions that you were talking about are some of those instruments as well as the field of psychology and as well as the medical field to sort of reify this idea of what is normal, what's abnormal, and they're fake. They're all false and have been set up as some way to make people to push for this idea of how to be a proper citizen in the world, and it's to be as normal as possible. So we have to create these categories of abnormal or difference. Mm-hmm. Does that?
And it's really just where it falls on the graph anyway. I mean, it's like no one. It's like that's what makes it all up. It's a million shades. It's a zillion shades. It's as many as we are in color and change and in our things. There is no normal. Normal would just be a statistic, a number. There no one would. Maybe one person out of 7 billion people would fall into that exact spot. So you're right. It's completely fictitious.
Yeah, I think I have a lot of conversations with young people actually through my work, talking about race, talking about sexuality, talking about internalized oppression and shame, how all that stuff sort of comes up. And we always address this question of normal and what normal actually is and how there's so much shame and so much sadness when you come up in a culture where you're told normal is this specific thing and you are not that.
And you are not normal.
And you are not that. Right.
And
so we as a society have sort of kept this really narrow view of what we think normal is. We think it's like Christian. We think it is straight. We think it is like, you know, like a professional and like getting a lot of money and going to college and all of these things.
And getting married.
And getting married and all of these ways of being. And so how do you have conversations to allow folks to be like, okay, my normal is different from your normal, but we're both completely human and completely equal. So how do you get to that space? I think it's sort of where we need to start pushing more.
Yeah, and this mm-hmm. function of normality is wrapped up in this idea of how productive you are as a citizen.
Right.
If
yes.
you don't do these particular things, then you're not feeding into this false idea of being a productive, useful citizen in the world. And the conversation of what productivity is and what it means to be a productive person needs to be put into conversation mm-hmm. as well.
And I think we have to look at not only where we've gotten to, but where we've come from. As people, we look to explain, you know, and we look to make sense of. And, you know, I just remember for as long as I can remember just asking why this, why that. And then whether or not the explanation makes sense, I get an explanation. And so as people, we make up these stories. And then the stories become our realities, mm-hmm. you know. And growing up, I was Seventh-day Adventist. And so I wanted to know, why we go to church on Saturday, they go to church on Sunday. You know, and the story was, well, because they got it wrong. You know, and they're going to be punished because of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it didn't make sense. Because to me, it didn't make any difference what day you went. Right. You know, but there was this whole elaborate story around it. And it became a reality. And there were all kinds of feelings and emotions that came along with it. And, you know, I remember one day telling my friend when I was about 4 or 5 years old, y'all going to hell. And I got hit. I got punched in the mouth.
Oops.
You know, and so, you know what I'm saying? And so all of these stories become something bigger. You know, and so we do that to each other and we do it to ourselves. And so somewhere along the line, we have to start undoing them and realizing that You know, and then we turn around and put it on this deity out here somewhere and say it's your fault. Never seen it. Never came down and talked to you. Never sat here and said, well, no, I ain't do it. You know, but what I'm saying is we turn these stories into realities and then we do it to each other, you know. And so then you see somebody who loves different from you and you go, what's that? And you go, something must be wrong with that. And then you see somebody who looks different from you. What's that? Mm-hmm. You know, and then you say the deity is infinite and it creates infinitely, but it can only count to two.
So,
what's that?
Longer conversation?
Longer conversation. Let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888. And Kate on line one, then we'll go to Sandy. Kate, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for this great conversation. I think one thing that's disturbing me is marriage becomes legal is that now in order to access benefits, and your guests have already talked about this, you have to be married, right? So healthcare is now reliant on being married to someone who has healthcare or, you know, these kinds of things. And I'm concerned that our society, we don't seem to be able to think of a way to collectively support the collective, right, so that everybody has healthcare regardless of, you know, whether or not you agree to share your home and only have sex with one person for the rest of your life. I was just wondering if your guests think this is a step forward to sort of moving us towards a place where we could meet our collective needs collectively, if this is opening up or if this is, you know, in the decision talking about how the married couple is almost a stronger individual, right? The pair is stronger than the parts, right, is actually in the decision. So is this a step forward or is this a way of reaffirming our sort of consistent focus on the individual? Thanks so much for the show. I'll take the response off the air.
Thanks, Kate. I mean, I think that Kate raises an important issue here. I think that what – let me just posit this and tag on to what Kate said. I think whether we're talking about the Supreme Court decision and the battle over LGBT rights in America, that all these things and the battle against that has erupted in America around racism in this 21st century in a way it has not erupted in centuries past, because it's a very different kind of eruption now that goes to the heart of it and the bottom of it and the root of it in this country, mm-hmm. who we are. I wonder if we're not at a place where Kate said that is one of the forces at work in this society now, is that move towards a collective and well-being for all. That's not all of it, but that's a piece of what's evolving here.
I think because we are operating in an American society, in a North American society, and we are operating in a capitalist structure, that whole individual notion is always going to be there. It's something that has been there for a very long time and is going to continue to be there for a very long time. So while I think marriage equality is a huge push forward and I think it's fantastic and beautiful, I do think I would agree with the caller, actually, that we are not really talking about this collective mentality. We're not talking about sort of ways that we can sort of share and give to each other, not based on money or you know, based on other things. Yeah, I think so. So everything that happens in the law system in America is based on a very individual sort of setting, which I think is probably not awesome for many of us. And actually part of the reason why I think we're fighting so hard and not getting a whole lot of progress as an intersectional people, because we're not really talking about collectivism and really and what that means.
I don't necessarily think that's true in that I think that if you can, I think the idea of marriage starts to open it up. We're based on this puritanical, very myopic and old idea of where this country got founded. And I think we've always had issues with sex. We're really immature. And we have, like, what is it, like, most television appeals to, what, like 9 to 11-year-old kids. I mean, you know, it's just like so, and whatever their sex thing is or not. So, and they're not even really mature at that point. So anyway, there's that. But I think that if maybe that collectiveness, that openness, that peace and love and prosperity for everybody can come out of a good step forward, which is the idea of that it's okay for you to get married. You don't have to be shameful about this. And sometimes you find someone that you're in love with who's really empowering to you and really helps you pursue your dreams and bring you out of your insecurities, and you use each other as your own little love nest to make it better, because the whole world is against you, and particularly if you're gay and your family doesn't understand you at all, and transgender and bi. Okay, let's
go ahead, and then I'll open the phones up to you, Kalima.
I also want to add that we would not be having this moment of productivity that you were talking about, Mark, you know, this sort of spark, and what the caller's talking about in terms of this conversation of collectivity. We would not truly be able to be having these conversations in this way without the creation of queer theory, queer of color critique, Black feminist thought, all of these spaces that are steeped in queer, to have us understanding how systems work, how structures work, and actually be questioning them. So I think that to that extent, this coming through the gaze of queer provides this avenue for these ruptures to appear, for us to be able to question the ruptures and be able to question the systems and question the structures. And in the end, that leads to collective action. And that's collective action that acknowledges differences and different ways those differences play across power.
Another part of the conversation is that there is a sense in this country that capitalism as its form really isn't working for everybody. Mm-hmm. And so there's some people who may whisper it behind closed doors that won't speak it out loud. And we're reaching a tipping point where it's going to have to be spoken out loud by masses, because it really isn't. It really isn't. You know, I mean, you have people bitching on a bus about not making enough money, and they know that 1% has all the money. They know it. They know it. They won't say it out loud, but they know it. You know, so, yeah, something definitely has to change, and queer theory really is talking about collective. You know, so something really does have to change, but more people have to really, really, especially Black people, because we're holding on to values that aren't even ours. You know, they've been like cut and pasted on us, and we're holding on to it for dear life, and like abusing ourselves and oppressing each other with them. You know, so, you know, we're reaching a tipping point where people are just starting in mass to realize that this really isn't working for me. I'm fat and miserable, and I can't get off the remote. You know, so they really need to like do something else.
Let me open the phone to you again. 410-319-8888. And let's go to Sandy. You're on the air, line two.
Yes. To me, I think that our basic problem is religion. Religion has put sex in such a narrow, I don't know the word for it, so that so many things are wrong. People can be stoned for adultery. People can be stoned for having a child out of wedlock. People can be should be killed for being sexual workers. And the religious dogma, which is very narrow and I think very perverted, allows and encourages people to be hostile, cruel, and murderous to those that do not fit into that very narrow spectrum.
Thank you so much.
I was in Israel just a couple of weeks ago at the wall, where the women were trying to have an opportunity to actually have a Torah on the wall. This, the Torah is only on the man's side of it's called the Kotel. And so all these women were there, and we were all praying, davening together, and we actually there was one man who broke away and tried to deliver a Torah to the other side of the women on the wall. And it was amazing. Of course, he was accosted, and he was the religious ones on the other side were, beating him up. Actually, the police actually saved him. But the point is that I think we're making some points in it. I think there are people, there are women, especially women that I know of, and I'm sure there's male groups as well, that are addressing these exact things, these old archetypal religions that don't work anymore. Maybe they made some sense at the time. I doubt it. Maybe women's survival, we succumbed to this so that we survived. I don't know, but there's this whole like trust thing of with everyone, and I think we've outgrown these old these old things, and we're moving forward, and we're crashing into it, and we're at a point where here we are talking about it. And I thought what you said before about the who's on the air, what voice are we listening to, who's speaking. Man, you're so right.
Yeah, I think with the religion question, it's interesting. So in some of the conversations that I have with people oftentimes, there is this incredible devotedness to one's religion and one's faith. But at the same time, knowing that they're gay or they're bisexual or they're transgender, and thinking that, like, I'm completely in love with my faith, but I know that I'm going to hell because my faith tells me that. And so that creates just such pain and such cognitive dissonance in a lot of our young people. And so religion is definitely something that is that's going to be something to overcome. And I think, but in that same breath, I've met a lot of people who have incredible faith, of incredible love, of incredible beauty, who actually have sort of seen that there are many different pathways to whatever enlightened states that may exist, right? And there are ones that maybe nothing exists, and that's fine too. There are all these different pathways that folks will take. And so it's really just important to religion is definitely something that's a struggle for a lot of folks, but there's other ways to talk about that too. And talking about the sex piece, was invited to a church to do sexual health education a little while ago, and we weren't able to sort of bring condoms. And so that fear about sex and that fear about talking about how we all exist as people is just crazy to
you
me.
Couldn't bring condoms.
We could not bring condoms because we were in a church. And so, you know, that's a whole other conversation also. But again, just acknowledging, you know, sexual beings, acknowledging that there's many paths to religion, stuff.
In or out of church or anywhere else you might go, no condoms, you're in trouble.
Well, here's some numbers for you.
Okay, go ahead. I do have to get...
On any given Sunday, there are 13 million more women in church than men, but the men occupy 90% of the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I not shocked?
Mm-hmm.
So before we get out of here, I do want to kind of talk a bit about Genesette Gutierrez, who is the trans woman, Latina trans woman, who stood up and yelled at President Barack Obama during the press conference, and he said, "This is my house, this is not, if you're going to yell at me, it can't work," and has had her kind of pulled out. And I think, and so everybody was kind of praising him for the way he handled it, and given that he was celebrating marriage equality and more at that moment with a largely GLP, so many parts of that, LGBTQ audience members. So what do we think about that moment?
I paid for him to be in that house. I keep the lights on in that house. And I'm sorry, she keeps the lights on in that house too. And she paid for that house.
And I think she has a legitimate question.
And that's we're talking about LGBT rights. We're talking about same-sex marriage. We're talking about all these things. There's a space in there to talk about undocumented trans folks. And
who are being sexually assaulted
in federal spaces.
Yes. Yeah.
So while I respect the POTUS and the fact that, yes, this is my house. Okay, Ray Lewis, do your thing. Realize that the citizenry got you in that house. So open up the space and pass the mic for a quick second, or at least there should have been a more respectful way for him to handle that. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that the other queer folks in the room seem to have forgotten that Stonewall was a riot, right, and that ACT UP existed, and they were throwing ashes on the steps of the Capitol and laying in the streets. And that there's a whole movement that's about disrupting power structure that is a part of a queer identity, that just was disappointing.
It was disappointing.
I totally validate her and honor her. I think just when you are not heard and you have a moment to be in front of someone, you are going to make yourself heard, right? And so, like, that's what was happening. And the fact that she was... I know she was pulled away and not allowed to really express herself, not allowed to be in the room, is really disheartening and troublesome and really frustrating to me.
Yes. I would have preferred if he would have said, "Can you hold that to the end and we can talk about it?"
Right.
Yeah.
There are respectful ways to assert that authority without silencing one of your constituents.
Right.
I agree.
Okay. So what do you think are important now as what comes after this? Now that this is the law of the land, I'm not getting into the politics of it. We don't have a few minutes left. The politics of what's happening in this next election, where the conservative groups in this country and Republican groups in this country are going to make a huge issue of this, and that's going to be part of the electoral process, and stopping Alabama and Texas and probate judges not giving out marriage licenses to gay and lesbian people and all the rest. Mm-hmm. We're getting to that another day because that is part of the political discussion. But where do you think this, as people who are active and activists, what are the issues here, especially when you talk about communities of color And what comes next in this conversation?
A lot of work at the local level, because it means at the local level, we have to implement what happens with national policies. And so at the local level, what happens nationally is macro. What happens at the local level is micro. So we have to deal with all of our communities and all of the prejudices in our communities and all of what happens individually, because what the president does at Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington doesn't have any effect on what happens at Pennsylvania Avenue in Baltimore. So, you know, all the little quirks that we have to deal with here are different.
I'm sorry. I've been asked by my producers to get to a quick last caller here, if you don't mind.
Okay.
410-319-8888. Mark, you're on the air. Sorry.
Hello?
Hi, Mark. You're on the air. Go ahead. We have a few minutes left.
I just want to ask a question to the panel. What was the difference between that woman when she screamed at him the other day, at President Obama, that is, and when that man in South Carolina screamed, "You lied," a few years ago, because both of them disrespected screamed at him. So I don't understand the, you know, what's the big difference?
One was an elected official, and one was a constituent. And that's a big difference. Someone else was an elected official saying, "You lie." You know, that was what? That was another congressperson. Yeah. Versus an actual activist constituent saying, "Hey, can we have this conversation?" That makes a totally, that's a totally different framework.
Anybody else?
Yeah.
Perfect.
So mm-hmm. again, in closing, you have an event coming up in July?
Yes, we have
Monica,
the Baltimore Trans Uprising coming up on July 24th at 5 p.m. We're going to be in Charles Village, leaving from the Why Not lot, which is on a corner of on a corner of North Avenue and Charles Street. We're going to be gathering at 4:30, and the march is going to start at 5 p.m. And the march, because I saw your list of links, and there was Maya Hall on one of the links, and the march is going to be in honor of the trans women who have been murdered, and there's been really no follow-up from the Baltimore City Police Department. And the march is also going to be for trans women who have encountered misconduct from the Baltimore City Police Department. And for the number, we've filed numerous complaints against the Baltimore City Police Department with no action taken against the police. One last thing. We actually scheduled a memorial for Maya, and then the Freddie Gray incident happened, so we had to postpone our memorial.
So that's at July 24th.
So this is July 24th.
And we'll post that on our website. Monica Stevens-Yorkins, community activist from Baltimore, of Sisters of the Baltimore Trans Alliance.
Yes.
Sonia, of course, is the founder of the Sonia and Disappear Fear, who joins us here in Baltimore again. Kalima Young, director of the Baltimore Art Plus Justice Project, the Mill Institute College of Art. Michael Franklin is program coordinator for Star Trek Adolescent Health Program at the University of Baltimore, Maryland, Baltimore, and co-chair of GLSEN Baltimore, the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network. Thank the four of you so much for this hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all here. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our engineering intern is Anthony Nichols. Our intern, Dan History Research Producer, is Sienna Greaves. Theme music by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. We're going out with one of Lena Horne's most famous pieces, Stormy Weather, born on this day in 1917. One of the great women of the last century. To podcast the Mark Steiner Show and share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.
Raining all the time. Life is bare, gloom and misery everywhere. Stormy weather. Just can't get my poor self together.